Good afternoon. My name is Josh Wexler. I'll be moderating today's panel on the current landscape for the shipping capital markets. Just a little bit about myself. I'm a capital markets partner at the law firm of Fried Frank. We are based in New York, Europe, and Asia. We specialize in capital markets, M&A, asset management, and restructurings, and we have a particular focus on shipping, working for the issuers and the underwriters across all products up and down the balance sheet. Joining me today on the panel are three of today's leading bankers in the shipping industry. First up, we have Carl Frederick Stabo, Managing Director and Head of Shipping Investment Banking at Clarkson Plateau Securities. Clarkson Plateau is a leading investment bank in raising public equity for shipping companies, having raised more than $32 billion U.S. in equities and high-yield debt for the maritime clients since 2010. Next up, we have Ricard Babo, Managing Director, Head of Corporate Finance at Fearnleys Securities. Fearnleys has been quite active in the shipping and offshore markets the last year, completing over 20 equity and debt issues within these sectors and a large number of public and private sale, leaseback, and advisory roles. Some of their more notable deals include raises for Navios, Maritime Containers, MPC, Borr Drilling, Eagle Bulk, and Songa Bulk. Last up, we have Todd Wilson, Managing Director and Global Head of Maritime at Jefferies. Todd runs the Maritime Investment Banking Group at Jefferies, where he has been there for over 3 years. Since 2002, Jefferies Maritime has completed over 50 transactions for shipping clients, including IPOs and other equity raises, leverage finance, M&A, restructuring and advisory work, all with a total transaction value of almost $20 billion U.S. Gentlemen, thanks for coming today. Let's get right to it. Are the capital markets open for shipping, and where's investor sentiment right now? Why don't we start with you, Carl, and we'll work our way from, I think, from Norway to the U.S.
Yeah. Well, so year to date, we have seen the total amount of public equity raised for shipping to the tune of $1.6 billion. That compares to $2 billion last year, $2.3 in 15. And then back to 13 and 14, when the market was really open, we raised between $7 and $7.5 billion between US and Norway. So I would say that on the equity side, the market is in line with what we've seen for the past 2 years. I think some of the key differentiating factors is that for the last 2 years, we've been repairing balance sheets and providing runway. This year, we have been raising equity to capture growth opportunities, primarily between dry bulk, LNG, that's primarily new builds, dry bulk was primarily secondhand, and most recently, containers. On the debt side, however, we have seen the most active year. This is then measured by Norwegian high-yield bond activity, where we've seen $1.6 billion there also, which is the highest number since 2014, which saw $2 billion. So I would definitely say that the debt capital markets is open for shipping, and we've seen a lot of activity as of even after summer. And to answer your last question, container is the sector that's sort of most in demand at the moment, given the distress in the sector. I guess a similar pattern to what we saw in dry bulk last year, and several investors that have made 2 to 3x their capital investing into dry bulk 12 to 18 months ago are now trying to replicate that in the container space.
Ricard?
I have to say I completely agree. The markets are open. We have seen a lot of new equity transactions started off in second half 2016, continued, you know, the first half up until summer this year. Right now, there's more activity and focus on the credit side. But as I think in general, markets are open for the right opportunities, both in U.S. and also.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Obviously, there's a lot of activity. I think more so in Norway than in the U.S., especially on new capital raises, so IPO front. But I think all of us have worked on many transactions in the last 12 months. And the way I like to think about it is the overall capital markets, I wouldn't say are robust, aren't hot for shipping. But that being said, you know, Jefferies has led or participated in public equity raises, private equity raises, public debt raises, private debt raises, convertible issuances, all in the shipping sector. And so the capital markets are definitely open for shipping. It depends on the company, it depends on the price, and it depends on the project. I think, you know, from an IPO perspective, it's a little more challenging in the US. We haven't seen one in over 2 years now. But I think the capital markets are still there for shipping companies, again, given the right price, the right project, and the right company.
So let's talk about that a little bit on the IPO front. So the US markets have not been there for shipping IPOs in the last year and a half, 2 years. We hear Oslo, there are a lot of listings going on and new projects, new platforms. Could we talk a little bit about what we're seeing in Oslo and also some of the advantages to the Oslo listing versus the US listing?
You can start.
You guys want me to take this one?
Yeah, Tom, please.
Well, I guess if I start at the end, there is has been a lot of activity in Oslo. The IPO market has more or less been closed since 2015, where we saw the last commodity shipping IPO. From 13, 14, and 15, I think we saw somewhere mid-20s IPOs in Oslo and New York. There hasn't been any new transactions since. We have seen existing large publicly listed names having legacy debt and you know, challenges with the financing that has not been able to or allowed new IPOs and arbitrage opportunities on pricing for new companies. So the companies that has been created over the last, I would say, 2 years has been typically distressed asset opportunities. And a fantastic market for that is the Norwegian market, where you have very efficient documentation, both time-wise and cost-wise, and also a well-functioning community of lawyers and analysts and etc. And you're able to tap the capital market at a very speedy process and tap the same capital sources, or to a large extent the same capital sources as you do in a typical US IPO, which tend to take 6 to 8 months. You can be able to raise, you know, 200-300, or even Borr Drilling, which raised $800 million in a week or two.
Yeah, I think what we've seen is more or less nothing outside of the norm. The Oslo market and the OTC in particular is very efficient to capture growth opportunities, as Rickard was saying. I think one of the key differentiating factors is obviously speed to market. But another important differentiator is that you can tap the market numerous times if you find more interesting investment opportunities within a short time frame. So if you IPO in the US, you cannot raise any additional equity for the next 12 months. So you've done one deal and you're handcuffed for 12 months. Whilst in the Norwegian OTC, there's no such restriction, neither for the full Oslo Stock Exchange. So that means that you can go quite aggressively at a market opportunity that you see and build a large and liquid platform that cater for the real purpose of being listed, which is obviously to create a currency trying to trade above NAV and also have secondhand liquidity in your stock. One example of such is as Rickard say, Borr Drilling, that raised $160 million in December and then came back in January and raised another $800. Another example is back in 2013 when Scorpio Bulkers was created. We raised $1.2 billion in 4 consecutive equity offerings, all within 6 months. So you can go quite quickly, quite aggressively if you have the right projects.
Do you see the Oslo listing, the end game, is that a first step to a U.S. listing down the road?
I think, just to start off, I think here there are also a few misconceptions. So you have the Norwegian OTC, which is a stepping stone, for sure. And no one should be on the NOTC as their end game. But once you're in, on the NOTC, that's what captures the sort of speed to market. Then you have to migrate from there to what's a full listing. And then we believe there are two real venues to go. It's either a full listing in Oslo, or it's a full listing in New York. So the Oslo market needs to be divided between the NOTC and the full listing on the Oslo Stock Exchange. I think once a business is more mature and has more dividend capacity, we've seen that you can more often than not create better secondhand liquidity and get better pricing by going to the US. But one important requirement there is that you have a sufficient enough market cap. So if you're not big enough and you have another sort of natural link to Norway, you're better off to list in Oslo.
Todd, do you want to talk a little bit about the criteria that actually that U.S. listing and that market cap, what it takes to really do the U.S. listing?
Sure. And let me touch on a couple of points just on the OTC market, which I think is a great tool for a startup company, a clean company, which I think is key, is that these companies that are raising capital are clean companies, meaning they're not over-leveraged. They haven't suffered, you know, some of the pains of the past few years where companies were over-leveraged at higher asset values. Asset values are lower today. Now they're really over-leveraged. So I think there is investor demand, and I think U.S. investors are playing some of these OTC issuances. I think a couple of things. One is scale, obviously. The U.S. markets prefer a bigger company, and I don't have a silver bullet for size. I mean, it's going to be specific to the opportunity, but minimum 250 million of equity value, and more likely 3 to 500 million of equity value is really what's required for a US IPO. But I think before we even go there is investors have to start seeing some return on some of their shipping investments, right? So you haven't seen many total return stories in the shipping space in the last two and a half years on public stocks. And so I think maybe putting aside some of the LNG spaces or some of the high dividend payers, I think you really need to see some of that happen before investors in the U.S. will start to say, you know what, now's the time for a new shipping IPO and a new company. That being said, I think investors will line up as they have in the OTC market if a clean company with size that has a real, you know, downside protection with real upside to some of the trends that, you know, numerous research analysts before us today have tried to point out. If there's a real forward story, you know, as somebody also today has said, everybody is greedy. U.S. investors are probably the greediest. So if there is something that's undervalued in the market today that looks like there's some green shoots for some real visible positive earning momentum in the future, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a U.S. IPO sooner rather than later.
There's actually been some alternative ways people have been getting public over the last year, and primarily, I guess some people are calling it IPOs through M&A, IPOs through merger. The couple that we've seen are the Navigate product tankers, Scorpio deal, and the Quintana Golden Ocean deals. What are the pros and cons of these deals? Why do you see this as a good path for some of these companies, the smaller ones that want to get public? Why is this a better path than sort of waiting it out, building up your own investor base privately, and then eventually going public?
Going public through an M&A, we have seen Quintana and Golden Ocean, Navigate, and Scorpio, to mention a few. I guess with the limited opportunities for a new IPO today, there is not really an alternative to create a liquidity event. You can, of course, sell your company, but to retain a potential upside combined with a larger entity, create exit opportunities for yourself, I think the combination with a private and public company is a great opportunity for both the existing company that potentially are not able to raise fresh capital at that point, but you know, to do a cash and or share deal with a private company creates growth opportunities without, you know, needing to go out raising fresh capital in a challenging market. So I think we'll see more of that going forward.
A couple of observations as well. I think it really depends on your rationale for going public. And if you have a private company and you exchange it into a public one and get shares, you're more often than not in a more liquid position than what you were before coming into the merger. Also, if you're not seen as a sort of the driving force behind the public entity, it's a lot easier to trade around your position, either increase or decrease, as you move through the cycle. I think once you are seen as the sponsor behind a listed company, your position is a lot more locked. Another observation is that, at least for now, the soft markets has driven the drive towards M&A, if you like. And in some of the instances, it's been a drive where you have to see one of the entities being in need of capital injection and putting your company into another company, whether it's the company being acquired or the acquirer. That brings you arguably an excuse to increase the capital base, but not only focused on the existing platform.
Yeah, I think my colleagues here have hit the nail on the head, but I would just add there's a couple of things that I think drive this IPO through or IPO by M&A, and I think it's, look, there aren't a ton of synergies in these deals, right? I think everyone out there operates their vessels as efficiently as they can, and so it's not like you're going to create a ton of synergistic value by combining two companies. The question is what are each side getting out of this and where are they willing to compromise? So the you know, historical hindrances to M&A in the shipping space are valuation and relative valuation, and are my ships better than your ships, right? And so if you can put aside that and agree that all ships are valued equally and combine on a relative value basis, that clears that hurdle. So if you're willing to sit down and negotiate to that, then it comes to social issues and governance. And I think, you know, it's what's driving this. Is there enough quote unquote value, right? Maybe it's through, you don't have to raise capital on your own. You can now raise capital through the public company. It's dilution through a bunch of shareholders, not just yourself. And then are you willing to cede control, right? There's still a holdup, I think, in the sponsor world. People ask me all the time, what are these private equity companies going to do that have fleets and funds that don't have an indefinite life? And the question is, are they willing to, you know, cede control of a private company, which is what their bread and butter is, to take, you know, passive shares in a public company? And it's a really tough decision point, I think, for some of those fund managers. And so the catalyst, again, to me, has to be, what are they getting out of it? And are they getting enough liquidity? Because remember, there aren't many shipping companies with over $1 billion market cap. So are they getting enough liquidity out of this? And are they getting something that, you know, their investor base, their LPs, will view as a positive move forward for the fund and for that particular asset?
Do you guys see any advantage to doing a sort of direct listing as a first step to get that transparency going, to get the corporate governance going, maybe not necessarily a capital raise yet, but doing the listing as a first step to ultimately an IPO? Have you seen that model, and are you seeing that as a trend anywhere?
So you're saying listing without actually raising capital? Yeah. To be honest, no. I haven't seen that as an attractive tool. I've talked about that with several companies. The issue with that is, what does that get you, right? Mm-hmm. I guess you have a public listing now, but in order to get a following, have research, you really need to raise capital, have some underwriters on there, and really get the story out there, broaden the investor base. So I don't think being public for the sake of being public, it's costly, one. Mm-hmm. And two, it doesn't really get you what you want out of a public listing, right? It might fast forward you a couple of months, but I don't think it solves anything.
Okay. Why don't we switch gears a little bit and let's talk about some of the other capital raising techniques people are doing right now, in particular the bond market. Clearly, there's the U.S. bond market and the Norway bond market, and I think there's a lot of competition between the two in launching that as a product. Pros and cons to each of those. Maybe we can run through that, both from a perspective of each of your banks.
Yeah, I can start off. I think as for the equity capital market, Norwegian markets are not anywhere near as deep probably as the general US market. But you know, again, it's efficiency. And if we look at the bond processes, the process of raising capital in a bond, in Norway you typically do it on a private placement. Investors are subscribing through the term sheet in a private placement and will not require a prospectus as you will do in a typical international bond raising. The due deal is less extensive. Execution here takes typically 3 or 4 weeks versus 10 to 12 weeks on an international bond process. And there's some pros and cons on that. And I would say the pros for Norwegian process is swift process. It's cost efficient and very, very well suited for smaller issues, especially. But again, on the negative side, it's probably less liquid than an international placed bond. The positive with a international is probably the broadest distribution and legal protection for the investors. Negative is costly and comprehensive and time-consuming.
The covenant packages, though, are more of it's more of a maintenance covenant than an incurrence covenant in the Norway bonds.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. markets, obviously, as he mentioned, provide a deeper investor base in you know, your ability to do larger deals. Essentially, the size is unlimited, and that's both in the bond market as well as the term loan B market, which is something that shipping companies have had quite a bit of success accessing this year. Right, Navios. One of the MLPs access it, International Seaways access the term loan B market in a big way, a $550 million transaction, which I think is the largest debt raise for a shipping company in quite some time. And so that's what the US market offers. Now, what are the drawbacks? Time, yes. Typically it requires a rating. Now, you can do unrated deals, but it eliminates some of that deep investor base. And I would say then, you know, the advantage of the U.S. market is ease of reaccessing that market. So once you've tapped the U.S. public debt markets, we'll call them in a term loan B and high yield, you've created an investor base and you have you now have a following. And so your next deal is incrementally easier.
Again, one thing to highlight here is that the Norwegian bond market is a Norwegian documented bond. It's still international investors buying it. So most of the accounts that would buy into it would, in addition to Scandinavian accounts, be institutional investors out of the UK and the US and sometimes also out of Asia. And the Norwegian documented process is recognized by essentially all of the institutional investors focused on shipping. And it's as Todd point out, they don't necessarily need a rating. It's still very efficient. But I would say, as Richard was saying, once you get to a deal size substantially north of $200 million, you might be better off looking to the U.S. market. But it's quite efficient up to sizes of that nature.
What about other products, follow-on activity in the equity space? What are you seeing? Are you seeing converts, pipes? There's a variety of things to tap into right now. What trends are you seeing in terms of what people are going after in terms of path?
I think part of this is linked to what we said earlier on, that follow-ons are mostly done on the, call it Norwegian OTC, when there is an aggressive growth vehicle at the, hopefully, the bottom of the cycle. We've seen, you know, a pipe is generally just a result of not having a large enough available shelf or having a too small market cap to be able to issue normal common shares. So I guess that really just depends on the issuer. I don't think there's a trend to say that pipes have become more normal or less normal. In terms of already existing platforms that are considering to do follow-on offerings, I think at the moment the only, call it, shipping segment that is trading at a premium to the underlying steel value is dry bulk. Every other segment is more or less trading at a discount, which means that it doesn't really make any sense to issue equity for growth initiatives if you have to sell at a dilutive position to your existing fleet. So I think we need to see share price appreciation across the board for all the other segments than dry to see any significant follow-on offering activity, unless there are for segments that are in a forced position and have to raise equity as part of a refinancing or because of a challenging cash position.
I might add some in terms of trends we are seeing, and I would say the lack of bank financing will affect, first of all, I think it's very positive for the existing shipping names and very exciting time we are entering. But I think that gap of capital will be replaced by bonds to a large extent, but also we will probably see new products with credit, with some equity link products coming up over the next couple of years. But right now, to a large extent, will be replaced by secured and unsecured bonds.
Yeah, I mean, I think Carl hit it on the head with, you know, there are equity deals to be done, but at what price, right? So if the entire sector is trading even at asset value, any deal you're going to do is going to come at a discount to that. So is it a project that still makes sense if you're raising equity, diluting your existing shareholders below asset value? So there are other tools, right? There are convertibles, which a few shipping companies have tapped in the last, call it 6 to 12 months. And to me, you could either call that cheap debt or cheap equity, right? It's a chance to sell equity at a higher price and pay a slight coupon, sometimes slightly more than your dividend, but usually less than what your theoretical next cost of debt would be on an unsecured basis. So there are definitely tools. As I said, you know, Jefferies, we've and I think Clarkson's and Fernley's as well have raised capital in various structures, whether it be convert, debt, equity. It all matters on price, structure, and really the underlying project, right? I think we've talked about some of the rescue financings that have happened, and I think more prevalent this year has been more clean companies or clean projects where investors are putting their money into something that they view as little or relatively little downside and a lot more upside, just given where asset values are today.
Looking ahead, crystal ball, what do you guys see?
I couldn't hear.
Besides the alternatives here.
What's your outlook? What do you think of where the markets are
going? Outlook, where the, which markets? Shipping, equity?
Shipping by sector and then by product.
Look, I think, you know, somebody said this to me earlier, so I'll say it. There's still too many ships on the water, right? I think that's the fundamental problem. There's still, global demand is pretty strong, aside from maybe some of the offshore sectors across the board, right? There are container lifts in the U.S. are at record highs every month, but the container companies still aren't making money. So that tells me that it's kind of perpetually oversupplied. That being said, there are sectors, I think, that are closer to recovery than others. LNG seems to be the one mentioned most often today. I think there is some, you know, again, given the demand growth, some, you know, interest in the container sector, albeit a lot of those companies, legacy companies, are still challenged from a leverage perspective. From, you know, crude, product, which one of those turns first, I think they have to turn together. I think it's tough to say one will do markedly better than the other for any sustained period of time anyway. But and again, stepping back from the capital markets, which is what really matters to me, I think investors are there. If there was a liquid opportunity that had, you know, relatively little downside and some real visibility into some upside, investors are ready. They're looking at undervalued sectors. There aren't many undervalued sectors out there today. And you could argue almost across the board, shipping stocks are undervalued.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would say right now we are getting better utilization every day that passes. We are all tired of weak markets, and Martin earlier today showed rates well below 10-year and 20- and 30-year averages. The capital market is also extremely difficult. Take an example like Transocean. If you go back to May, you had a good start of the year. It came down with oil price. Since then, the oil price has gone from 40 to high, low 40s to high 40s. You have seen higher fixture activity. You have seen M&A activity, which tends to be positive in terms of negotiation power, et cetera, et cetera. But still, the share is flat at $7-$8. You can buy a ultra deepwater rig for $250 million on the steel basis for end 2018, which is seems ridiculous. And this market will not die. I think the stars are aligned for many of our sectors. Very few orders. Banks are more or less closed for new initiatives. Order books are marginal. If you look at the order book 9-12 months from now, it's more or less in line with 1 year demand growth. We saw Stofford showing overall order books at 9.5%. Take that picture, and 12 months from now, without any new orders, and you get pretty excited, I think. And we have had a weak sentiment for long, so a big driver here, whether or not it impacts the business direct, is oil price. And I think we are relatively positive on oil price. And with these major fundamentals going in place, I think it's just about a month from this market really taking off. And then I'm talking about dry bulk and tankers and containers and ultra deepwater rigs, etc. So I'm very excited. Furnace is excited. 5-year VLCC, I just looked at some implied valuations on existing well-reputed companies. Buy a 5-year VL at low 50s. Capes you can buy implied at $25 to $30 million. Ultra deepwater rigs at 250 with the best operators in the world. I think we are now in a period with a great risk reward and positive outlook going forward.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's reason to be very optimistic. It's interesting to hear that drill ships are also in demand. But as Martin said earlier on, we are at historical low order books. For the investors in this room, you can buy public companies at a discount to historical nominal low asset values. And you have a real demand pool more or less across the board. So we are very optimistic to shipping outlook and hope that people will hold off ordering new builds for a bit more so we can see some real rate recovery.
Well, that was very good. You finished just under the clock there. So thank you very much. Thank you for your time today, and thank you all for listening.